is under attack. This is The War Room with Owen Schroyer.
Watch the live stream
right now at Infowars.com/show.
Congressman, former congressman, medical doctor, Air Force veteran, Ron Paul was against the Iraq wars. He was against the Afghanistan operations. He's been against all of it. He's been proven right. This is a complex issue, but he's got a very well-researched angle on it, so I want to get his take. Thank you for joining us during this critical time.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Dr. Paul, let's get into your plan to avert, which could happen any time, causing a huge nuclear war.
Well, the sooner we get out of there, the better. You know, we went into Korea when I was in high school, and it was totally illegal, unconstitutional. It was done without the permission of the people. It was done within a week after the Civil War broke out in Korea. And some of my teachers never came home. We don't need to be there. We're just trying to provoke a problem. And this guy's nuts over there, so why provoke him? We are acting from a sense of insecurity that we have to say, you know, we're tough. Don't mess with us or we'll bomb you. But that to me is just sort of childish. So the sooner we get out of there, the better. We've been there way too long. And, you know, this whole idea, the stage is set now that, you know, the Koreans are threatening. Well, we might shoot down an airplane. Well, what if there's now that stage is set, it's progressing because of our involvement. Somebody's going to use a false flag and somebody's going to shoot down the airplane just so that there's war in the South. We bombed the North to smithereens. We killed 30% of their population, and they had never attacked us. We never declared war. We went there under UN banner. We have an insane foreign policy, and unfortunately, it really hasn't changed that much with our new president.
A lot of people say, well, we can easily defeat North Korea. Well, of course we can. But what happens if China or Russia gets involved, Dr. Paul?
Well, if they will get involved. And, you know, when it started way back in the 50s, we thought, well, we'll take care of this. And a month after the war broke out, you know, we essentially won the war. And then we moved up and decided, well, we'll occupy North Korea, went up to the border, and then the Chinese came in. Sure, they're going to be involved. But I think you just made the case for why we need to be out of there. Because, you know, the North Korea, the guy is goofy. But I tell you what, he does know what he's doing, because he has to threaten, because he believes that if he gives up and capitulates and does exactly what we tell him to do, that what will happen, like what happened to Saddam Hussein, what happened to Gaddafi, and then how do we treat you know, Assad in Syria? We have an empire to defend. We run the world, and it's wrong. It doesn't work. Millions of people have died over this, and it's time we as a people woke up and say, we ought to mind our own business. We ought to come home and defend this country. He's not going to invade the United States. He's not going to launch a missile. Just remember, the whole thing dealing with Iraq, about all the danger, great danger, and the propagandists, the deep state, the media, convinced the American people that Saddam Hussein was a danger. They're doing the same thing now with North Korea. My suggestion very clearly on what we should do is we should allow the South Koreans to talk to the North Koreans. What's wrong with that? They're the ones that have everything at stake, and we don't even allow them to do that. And yet they're willing to. Just last week, the South Koreans, in an effort to break this conflict, they sent a couple million dollars to North Korea to take care of some of the people, the kids that are suffering from our sanctions. The people suffer. We kill people. We killed almost a million Iraqis with our sanctions before we went to war. And all these sanctions do is just provoke the bitterness. We need to allow. Why do we prohibit the South Koreans from talking to the North Koreans?
About 45 seconds real quick on the economy. If we don't get the tax cuts, Paul Ryan wants taxes to be raised now. If we keep Obamacare, most analysts say that will cause a new recession or depression and cause that big implosion you've been warning of. 30 seconds on that, Dr. Paul.
Well,
War Room.
All right, we are live. It is the September 26, 2017 edition of the War Room. I'm your host, Rob Dew. Joining me, Jake Lloyd, one of our newest intrepid reporters who loves to go out and face the Antifas.
Love it.
You do love it. You know, some people don't like it. I'm kind of ambivalent. I don't mind them when they scream at me. It makes me laugh, usually, because it's like a rabid chipmunk. We saw that yesterday.
Yeah.
But here, well, in California, they attacked our reporter, Millie Weaver, with urine.
It's been said before that they behave like chimpanzees, like basic primate behavior, but now they really actually do throw urine and feces at people. It's pretty, you know, it's good. It's good to validate your cause like that.
You know, I don't see how you could say you had the moral high ground and throw poop at people.
Yeah, so. I don't know really how any of their thought processes go, so I couldn't speak to that.
Well, if you guys were joining us in the last segment, we were playing an excerpt from the Alex Jones Show that where he interviewed Dr. Ron Paul talking about North Korea. And one of the great points that we left out of that was Ron Paul said, "We invaded North Korea when I was in high school." That's how long we've had this boogeyman set up there in North Korea. And if you go back and look at the history of that war, MacArthur pushed them all the way to China. And then they said, "Oh, no, wait, we didn't actually want you to win this war. Let's back off. And so they end up on the 38th parallel, which is where we're at today, many years later. And Ron Paul's right when he says the sanctions only hurt the people. Kim Jong-un's going to eat. Okay. Right. His officers are going to eat. They're going to have everything they need. It's the people that starve. And he mentioned we did the same thing to Iraq. And that was during Clinton's era, 500,000 Iraqi children. And who was the Secretary of State at the time? It was Madeleine Albrecht, little troll lady, said it was worth the price. We had to kill these little kids. We had to make them starve. And
it's a nasty woman.
Honestly, if we really want North Korea to end, like, what is North Korea? North Korea is a place that we leave as a foe, as an undeclared truce. You know, it's a ceasefire. There's no truce. There's no nothing. It's an armistice. And basically what that is a place where we get to sell weapons and defense and have a base on South Korea. And people may not like hearing that, but that's what it is. It's a place for the military industrial complex to grow.
It's our designated boogeyman. That's
exactly
really what it is. It's just another excuse for, you know, to have military contractors, for the government to sell arms. I mean, it's no secret that the government's been selling arms to both sides of every conflict in the 20th century. I mean, that's the entire point of North Korea, to keep that alive. It's the same reason we went into Iraq, Afghanistan, all of that different stuff.
And so I could see why people would be like, "Hey, you know, this is what we're doing. We're against this type of military intervention." I'm against that type of military intervention. I don't think it's what we need to be doing now. I think we should be focusing on, there's so many other things we could be spending our money on than beating the whole world over our military spending. Yep. But what really does piss me off is what was on News Wars this morning, when we have officers in the army, and here's the headline: Pro Kaepernick army officer tweets communism will win photo. Okay, and this is a soldier. He's about to graduate West Point, and it was put out by Kami Bebop, and it said hashtag veterans for Kaepernick. And there he is with his. Let's scroll up and see the photo, guys. There you go. Oh, look at that! Communism will win.
So brave.
And so his name is Spencer Rapone.
What a good little
kid. And he's showing solidarity. And then there's another picture later where he had his Che Guevara shirt underneath. So he's literally using the United States as a training base where he can learn tactics, learn procedures, learn the ins and outs of the Army, essentially, and then defect to the other side.
Yeah, well, it's a disgusting display of arrogance and overconfidence. I mean, communist parties are still technically illegal in the United States. It was that was made to be so around the 1950s, I believe. So, and communism has been the enemy of America for the past 60, 70 years. It's not ever been a secret. You know, the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, all that different stuff. But it's disgusting. And I mean, you know, there's a lot of good officers.
And you were in the Army. You served.
There's a lot of good officers in the Army, but I mean, this guy would be an officer. It's not surprising to me at all. And he's a cadet. I don't know if he graduated.
Oh, no, they say he's still in the field. He's still in the field right now till Friday. And, I wouldn't want this to happen to anybody, let alone a commie. But, man, it would definitely be a shame if this were to happen to him. I think this is going to hurt. Ow.
I'm not saying this stuff still happens, but sometimes, you know, people slip in the shower. It's unfortunate, but...
Did you ever see anything like that when you were in the Army?
Oh, no, definitely not.
Definitely not.
Definitely did not see anything like that at all.
It's all a bad dream, right?
It was all a bad dream.
We would hate that to happen to that young man.
If there ever was.
But, you know, sometimes things like that jog your memory and go, wait a minute, what am I doing? How many people did communism kill, guys? I asked y'all to find that. And so how many? Let's just see how many people. It's in the hundreds of millions. And I'm sure there's a graph somewhere that shows how many people were killed by communism just in the 20th century.
How many corpses need to pile up before we say, you know what? Maybe it's a bad idea. Maybe let's not try it again. You know, how many times can you say, oh, it's not the real thing?
Zoom.
It's not the real thing.
All right. USSR, 20 million. China, 65 million. And these are the lower estimates. Some people say it was 85 million. Vietnam, 1 million. North Korea, 2 million. Cambodia, 2 million. Eastern Europe, 1 million. Latin America, 150,000. Africa, 1.7 million. Afghanistan, 1.5 million. And what does that say? Communist movements. Something, something, something. And there's another little graph. Which dictators killed the most people? And as you can see, Mao blows everyone else away. And as they were talking, Jack Posobiec was talking with Alex Jones. Jack will be joining us later on in the mm-hmm. show, talking about how they used to have giant pots that they used to put people in. They would put them in the cold water overnight to freeze them. Yeah. And then the next day they would cook them.
That's what progress looks like, comrade.
I've read some horrible, it was a horrible book by these kids who survived what was going on in Cambodia with Pol Pot. And they described how they went and killed anybody with glasses. Those people were killed because they could mm-hmm. read. Anybody who looked smart, anybody who wore a tie. I would be on that list. I would be on that list right now. And they killed those people, took everybody out into the country, and made them work as slave labor. But hey, that's freedom. That's the freedom that this piece of crap wants.
From each according to his ability, right?
Yeah. Spencer Rapone posted an image of himself raising a clenched fist salute, gesture known well within the communist and radical leftist circles. So he's with the NFL too. He's a commie. There he is, little commie. Well, let's hope a blanket party doesn't happen. That would be
like
hard.
To meet this guy in person.
So coming up, we're going to have John Rappaport. Not in studio, on Skype. Michael Zimmerman will be joining us, and we'll be playing excerpts from Roger Stone's speech to the House Intelligence Committee. He was going up against Adam Schiff and those other blowhards who just are looking for something that ties Trump to Russia, yet they can find nothing. We also have Facebook entrepreneur Jason Fike will be joining us from funnierpicks.com. He also has a bunch of Facebook accounts. I spent about 20 minutes talking with him the other day, and I was very interested in just his story about how he became successful on Facebook and then dealing with the censorship. And when he went and posted stories that were, I would say, leftist, pro-leftist, they would mm-hmm. those would go everywhere. And then when he started doing pro-Trump stuff, oh, it ended quickly. Well, you can't have that. You can't have anything popular being
it's a weird coincidence.
Pro-Trump. And we'll have Jack Posobiec in the studio coming up, so we'll have a lot of stuff coming up. Someone shouted bomb in a crowded tube today in London, and everybody panicked. Wouldn't you know it? That's part and parcel, though, living in a big city.
It just comes. It's part of the package.
That's right. All that and more coming up on War Room. I'm your host, Rob Dew. Joining me is Jake Lloyd. Infowars.com/show is the free stream that you need to be sending out to everybody you know. have all this talk about how noble and pious the NFL is because they're kneeling against the president and they're standing against it, even though most people... Where is it? I love how I print. There it is. Poll. Vast majority of Americans side with Trump on Take a Knee conspiracy. You can read that on Infowars.com. It's a Paul Joseph Watson article. And question 7 last week, Donald Trump said NFL players should stand and be respectful during the national anthem. Do you think NFL players should stand and be respectful during the national anthem? 64% said yes, 25% said no, 11% said unsure.
Well, it seems like a stupid business business move. Like, what's one of the biggest audiences for the NFL? It's Middle America, it's the Midwest, it's all that stuff, which is also the primary audience that, you know, doesn't like people disrespecting the flag too much.
Exactly.
Not a very wise business decision.
And so at the same time the NFL is embroiled in a controversy, we have the NCAA, which is basically a feeder system into the NBA and into the NFL and kind of into Major League Baseball, but not so much. Definitely right. NBA and NFL. And now the FBI has arrested 10 people, including elite NCAA coaches, sports agents, and Adidas executive, as part of a massive investigation into widespread bribery and corruption. And why is this? Okay, basically these guys who are out here making millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars every year for their colleges, for the NCAA, for sports stadiums across the country, they're raking it in for these guys. And these players don't see a penny. Well, they do get a free education, but I would say what they're producing and what they're bringing in is worth more than a free education.
Right.
With all the emphasis that's put on it. I don't think as much emphasis should be put on college sports, but it is. So apparently Adidas rep was giving $100,000 to a recruit's family in hopes of persuading him to sign to an unnamed college. And there are two schemes. One where recruits and families were paid to go to particular universities, and another in which player advisors were paid to persuade those players to sign with certain managers, agents, and financial advisors. So a lot of these kids are coming from nothing or less, you know, they're coming from lower class and they're being persuaded right. by this money that floats around, yet none of it floats to them. And I think that is a travesty. I think they should change that and they have to do something. You can't have a system where everybody's making money, but if you get a meal provided to you, suddenly you're not ineligible.
Yeah, well, even with the video games, the NCAA football sure. or whatever, they can't. The game is clearly using their likeness. You know, back yeah. when, you know, I haven't watched NCAA football in a long time, but like back when Colt McCoy was playing, you know, they wouldn't use Colt McCoy to play in the video game. It was just his number, but they're right. clearly using his likeness or anything. The players don't get any money because that would be illegal.
Right.
They would be ineligible to play. It's pretty ridiculous how all that works.
And so we have corruption everywhere going on. And it seems like Trump seems to be weeding it out. It looks like you mm-hmm. found a little nugget today on News Wars from Jerome yeah. Corsi about some corruption.
Yeah, well, I'm shocked to find out that there might be corruption riddled within the Barack Obama Foundation.
Already.
It's a
brand new foundation.
Man, they can't even give us a break. Can't even give us some time to get our stuff together. But it looks like a public record suggests that politically connected partisans serving as Barack Obama Foundation trustees may be emulating the long and dangerous record of Clinton Foundation trustees, which shows a wanton disregard for their solemn legal duties. People connected to the Clintons and Obamas disregard their legal duties.
Wow, I'm not surprised.
Who would have guessed? But one of the deals is that an audit report had not obtained sufficient audit evidence support its opinion that the financial statements were presented fairly. Mm. So people are, you know, they're just saying, oh, you're, you know, they're checking boxes. And that makes you kind of wonder what's motivating them to check these boxes saying that it's okay. You know, are they getting something under the table? Maybe some political favors.
Well, and it's like what Jerome said last week. He said they're set up to fund a library
mm-hmm.
and they're going to do all this other stuff on the side because they saw what the Clintons did and they go, hey, this is a good business plan. You yeah. guys really know what you're doing, Clintons. You guys are crooked, mm-hmm. crooked as heck. And
you create a slush fund and you call it a library. And it's
exactly.
Cool.
And then you could go around the world and raise money for disasters and stuff and not give it to anybody.
Well, that's another.
Maybe
that's another
pay for issue. The Obama daughter yeah, weddings.
That's another issue with this. The firm that they hired is based in Chicago. It's an incredibly small firm with very little experience. They don't even have offices outside of Chicago, let alone in the world where the Obama administration is already purportedly operating. So how are they going to manage these exactly?
Is yep. it a shell company?
That's
maybe
exactly.
Yeah,
what it looks like to me. I don't know.
Well, Jerome's going to be doing some more checking on this, and I think we should get him in a couple days back on here because there's going to be more updates with this story. Now, today, President Trump had a press conference with Mexico President Roja? I had his name earlier in my head. And he was asked about, he was asked about the NFL. But they were trying to imply that the NFL, him talking about the NFL at a rally, was keeping him from looking at Puerto Rico and the poor Puerto Ricans. And, you know, what I noticed this is the mainstream media has done very little coverage on what's going on in Puerto Rico compared to what they did in Texas and Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's because the Red Cross doesn't really go to Puerto Rico, so they can't, you know, siphon money off.
Maybe the MSM is racist.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe they don't like Puerto Ricans. Anyway, we do have what he said, and he's actually going there in a week. He said he'll be traveling there in a week. So let's go to that Trump statement on Puerto Rico.
Don't get nervous, Steve.
You were preoccupied with the NFL instead of dealing with Puerto Rico. Why isn't that a fair assessment?
Well, I wasn't preoccupied with the NFL. I was ashamed of what was taking place because, to me, that was a very important moment. I don't think you can disrespect our country, our flag, our national anthem. To me, the NFL situation is a very important situation. I've heard that before. About was I preoccupied? Not at all. Not at all. I have plenty of time on my hands. All I do is work. And to be honest with you, that's an important function of working. It's called respect for our country. Many people have died. Many, many people. Many people are so horribly injured. I was at Walter Reed Hospital recently, and I saw so many great young people, and they're missing legs, and they're missing arms, and they've been so badly injured. And they were fighting for our country. They were fighting for our flag. They were fighting for our national anthem. And for people to disrespect that by kneeling during the playing of our national anthem, I think is disgraceful. It doesn't take me long to put out a wrong, and maybe we'll get it right. I think it's a very important thing for the NFL to not allow people to kneel during the playing of our national anthem, to respect our country and to respect our flag. Okay?
Well, that wasn't quite the statement we were looking for, but that was in the same speech. And we're going to play the Puerto Rico. We're about a minute out from break. And so we'll play that Trump statement on Puerto Rico when we have John Rappaport joining us, who is going to be talking about the NFL. In fact, he's got an open letter to NFL players. You're being used. And I don't think they realized how big they are being used because I think a lot of these guys are concentrating on getting ready for games, studying tape, exercising, whatever players do, practicing over and over again, doing drills. So this should be pretty interesting. And he's got some stats to break it all down. I'm going to let him break it down when he's joining us next segment. And then we will also play Trump's statement on Puerto Rico because he explains kind of what's going on there, what they're going to do. I have a feeling you're going to see a major infrastructure investment into Puerto Rico because they have been devastated on that island. So we'll be right back after this short break. You're joining us here in the War Room. I'm Rob Dew. Got Jake Lloyd here, and we'll be right back after this short break. Thanks for watching.
Give me liberty
or give me death.
The fight
for the future is now.
This is The War Room with Owen Schroyer. Watch the live stream
right now
at Infowars.com/show.
So President Trump was in the Rose Garden today with Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy. And people were, the press, I don't know if they are people, slithering little snakes, were trying to get the president to admit that he was so preoccupied in this NFL controversy, which he made three comments about it so far. And so that's the first question in the press conference is about the NFL, which we played earlier. was, hey, you're not worried about North Korea. You're worried about this NFL thing. What's the big deal? And then also they bring up Puerto Rico. What are you doing about Puerto Rico? And here was his reply. And then we'll go to John Rappaport.
This quote, but the governor of Puerto Rico is so thankful for the great job that we're doing. We did a great job in Texas, a great job in Florida, a great job in Louisiana. We hit little pieces of Georgia and Alabama. And frankly, we're doing, and it's the most difficult job because it's on the island. It's on an island in the middle of the ocean. It's out in the ocean. You can't just drive your trucks there from other states. And the governor said we are doing a great job. In fact, he thanked me specifically for FEMA and all of the first responders in Puerto Rico. And we're also mentioning with that...
You won't hear that
Virgin Islands. It was devastated. So we are totally focused on that.
And you have a special meeting. Are you contemplating the deployment of special naval assets or air assets to Puerto Rico to redress problems there?
As far as Puerto Rico is concerned, I think just the opposite. We have had tremendous reviews from government officials, as we have in Texas and Louisiana, and as we have in Florida, as you know, from Governor Scott and Greg Abbott, great governors. And this morning, the governor made incredible statements about how well we're doing. We understand it's a disaster. It's a disaster that just happened. The grid was in bad shape before the storm. And Puerto Rico didn't get hit by one hurricane. Got hit by two hurricanes. And they were among the biggest we've ever seen, with the second one being even worse. I mean, the second one hit Puerto Rico as a Category 5. I don't believe anybody's ever seen that happen before. Hit land with that kind of velocity. The governor has been extremely generous, and I appreciated it. We right now have our top people from FEMA, and they have been there. We are unloading on an hourly basis massive loads of water and food and supplies for Puerto Rico. And this is
so Trump is delivering aid to Puerto Rico. He's not leaving him in the dust, which the media hasn't come out and said that, but they're kind of implying what's going to happen to Puerto Rico. He's been helping him since the disaster happened. He's actually going to fly there next week, and he's also going to go to the Virgin Islands. So he's not leaving them out to dry. He's going to help the people of Puerto Rico. But let me tell you, the Puerto Ricans, they were bankrupt before this. They have all kind of corruption going on that island. The officials are not helping the people. In fact, I saw a video of guys who were saying, hey, after the first hurricane, we had to clean up. We got no help from the local government. Now we're doing it again. He's like, and we're just going to keep doing it. So Trump is not leaving him in the dust, but you won't hear that from the mainstream media. They want to say he's more concerned about an NFL protest. Now, one person that has written an open letter to the NFL is John Rappaport. He's our guest, joining us now via Skype from the West Coast in the hepatitis-ridden region of San Diego. John, how are you doing?
Okay. Actually, I'm on the East Coast, so I'm way away from there.
Oh, I thought you'd moved to the West Coast for a while.
Well, I lived on the West Coast for 35 years, but now we are on the East.
Oh, excellent. All right. So you have no worry. I guess you're very far away from the hepatitis regions.
Yeah.
So tell me about your open letter to the NFL.
Well, basically, I said, look, if you guys think the players I'm talking to, if you think that police brutality against black people, by the numbers, by statistics, and I quoted them in my article, is the major reason that the inner cities of America have been in a decimated state for decade after decade, you're dead wrong. You don't know the real problems. You're not looking at the real problems. You're not looking at gangs, drugs, crime, unsafe neighborhoods that prevent real education from taking place. You're not looking at globalists stealing jobs and sending them overseas. You're not looking at lead in the water and other heavy metal pollutants and landfills that are put there by corporations in those neighborhoods. You're not looking at absent fathers in the home. You're not looking, of course, at grinding poverty or horrendously substandard nutrition. So look, if you actually want to solve these problems, NFL players, rather than just virtue signal forever and lock hands and kneel and sit and stay in the locker room, whatever, you know, I realize that for a lot of people, solutions, they're not interested. They just want to highlight what they think the problem is and get a lot of coverage. I'm interested in this case in the solutions. So if these players are not willing to look at all these real factors that are destroying inner city communities, and also if they're not willing to look at the war on poverty that's been going on since 1966, trillions of dollars poured down the rat hole. Where did the money go? Who stole it? Where was it diverted? Why didn't the programs work? What people, not only in the federal government and their friends and partners and cronies and so forth, but people in inner cities, supposed leaders who stole the money, if they don't want to look at all of that either, but they just want to take a knee during the national anthem, the whole thing is preposterous. It's totally wrong, totally preposterous. The whole thing is a charade because they don't want to think about the actual program problems, and they're not alone. But because they're the ones doing the protesting, and they're the ones who are saying this is the problem, they better wake up, because this is a covert op as old as the hills. Let's say you've got a chronic, horrible situation, and there are 10 things you could do to actually fix pieces of it, right? But instead, you divert everybody into this thing over here, this issue, which is never going to resolve the problem. That's the covert op. That's why these players are dupes, and they just simply don't know that they're working on behalf of keeping inner cities in a permanent condition of slavery, the very thing that they're talking against.
Yeah, so the NFL, they're basically the ultimate race pimps at this point right now.
That's
they're
right.
Using race as a wedge issue and pimping out the poor inner city youth, trying to say that they're for them, and they're actually not doing a thing. Now, I caused a little controversy on Twitter today. I showed a picture of football player Michael Bennett, who after he sacked the white quarterback from the 49ers, Brian Hoyer, in the first half, he did the Black Power salute right there. Boom. And there's pictures of it. You guys can pull those up. And there's even video that if you go to the article, Michael Bennett celebrated a sack versus 49ers with a raised fist. And you can find, if you go to the article, actually, there's a Twitter video of it. And so people are like, well, you know, he did it. He's doing it to protest. His account of he had an account with the Las Vegas police the night of the Mayweather fight. Okay, so they're saying this is why he did it. And he's a moral authority now. But you go back a couple years. Oh, NFL star Michael Bennett forks over $10,000 in puppy abandonment case. So we got a moral authority who literally abandons his dogs in doggy hotels. He ditched his four-month-old baby boxer, Koa, at the Lucky Dog boarding facility in Tampa Bay in 2013 when he signed with the Seahawks. Bye-bye, dog. See you later. All right, we'll be back with more with John Rappaport right after this. It's The War Room. So Paul Joseph Watson tweets, 16 unarmed black men killed by cops per year, 2,400 black men killed by other black men per year. Anyone going to take a knee over that? And then Ben Garrison just released this new image. You guys can get a shot of it. Of an NFL player literally jumping over the shark and taking a knee. There it is right there. And I will be retweeting that out. Our guest is John Rappaport. And, you know, John, during the break, I was thinking of one man who was an NFL player and who's out actually doing things for his community, and that's Jim Brown. And he actually went to a preseason game during the Browns and had a talk with them after 12 or so of their players took a knee. And the next game, they all went out there and stood straight up and put their hands over their hearts. So obviously he got the message to him. But he's a man who is concerned about the inner city communities and is doing things. What are some things these football players could do other than taking a knee? What could they do to help their communities?
Well, there's one solution that I've been advocating for a long time, and there are groups that are already trying this and have been doing it for years and years. Urban farms, folks, in the inner cities, lots of land that is not being used or is just rubble. Grow fresh, clean, organic food for a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the money that government has poured down the rat hole in the war on poverty. Loans to people in these inner city communities. Yeah, you've got it up on the screen now. There are just countless groups. In Chicago, there's actually a directory of these urban farms.
And they work. They work. I was in Detroit. They had them all over the place.
People grow their own food. They eat fresh, clean, organic. It's nutritious, builds their health. There's excess. They sell the food. They learn how to make a living and actually make money off of doing something good. The whole community rallies around. Now they have a much bigger stake in having safe neighborhoods away from drugs, gangs, crime, and so forth. The whole landscape changes.
These when you're picking weeds, NFL, you're not going to be picking bad friends.
Yeah, there you go for a slogan, right? Exactly. I mean, look, it's already happening. If 15 or 20 of these NFL players who are off completely on the wrong track would just get together and say, hey, we just figured out something. Guess what? Urban farms in every big city all over America. That, my friends, is a revolutionary act of the highest.
And they could call it. They could call it the National Farming League.
Small and small F, small L, the National Farming League.
That's it.
Perfect, man.
That's it. Okay. We've solved the problem almost.
You're the chairman. You're the chairman. You're in charge of PR. You got it.
I mean, my own garden to grow because I'm trying to get my kids into gardening too because I have three gardens. And we did grow some cucumbers this year. And then we went away for a weekend and came back in the sun and just destroyed the garden. Everything was dried up and dead. Mm-hmm. But with my own eyes, I've been in Detroit back in 2010. And Detroit's ravaged. It's either no house or a dilapidated house, every other house.
It's a war zone.
Yeah, and they've taken some of these areas and they've gone and made gardens and they have, you know, they're all brightly colored and they paint things and they have tires that are holding things in and they're building all these planters that are neat looking and people are out there working. They're out there working the soil going, this is what it's like to be a human.
Yeah. So why aren't we hearing more about that? Why aren't we hearing more about that from the government? I mean, just like the U.S. Department of Agriculture, you know, totally corrupt organization, but they could, if they wanted to, start this program, you know, heap praise on all the urban farms that already exist, make public relations videos on them right here, like you're showing on the screen, put these people, and then, of course, you're going to have restaurateurs from coast to coast, believe me, especially the ones that serve really great food. They're going to get on board with this. They're going to have chefs. You're going to have organic gardeners. You're going to have people from everywhere pouring in to inner cities and promoting and helping and teaching. As I say, this is revolutionary. If these NFL players want to actually do something, do it. You could have 5,000 farms like this in Detroit. You could turn that into a whole different world, believe me.
Yeah, it's amazing to think what things could be, and instead we've got the mainstream media pissing and moaning about this, just looking for any reason to attack the president. And basically all he said was, look, I don't think they should take a knee. He said that at a Luther Strange rally, which interestingly enough, it looks like Strange might lose. There's a poll came out yesterday that Roy Moore leads Strange by 11 points on the eve of the election. Now, Trump was going for Strange, but most of Trump's supporters like Moore. So it's very interesting. People aren't, what you're seeing is the cult. There is no cult of Trump.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's a people that support Trump and what he's doing and what he says. And then they look at the candidate and go, hey, I know you support this guy because you've probably been told by the Republicans you got to support this guy. But we're jumping on the Moore train.
Trump even said he's supporting Strange out of loyalty because, you know, Strange voted for something that Trump wanted in Congress. So he's supporting him out of loyalty. That's when he said, I might have made a mistake. Maybe Roy Moore is the way to go. And I mean, I think people notice that. They say, you know, Luther Strange has the establishment's endorsement, which is kind of a scarlet letter to be wearing these days.
Sure.
It's not exactly something you want. You want to be the outsider that nobody likes, at least in Washington.
Do you have any predictions on this, John Rappaport?
No, I have no idea, really, but 11 points sounds pretty good.
That sounds like a lock. I'd be amazed if it changes. And so that'll be interesting. But I think it shows that the Trump supporters aren't just blindly following whatever he says. And I think that also shows in this flag thing with the poll that came out where 63% of the people said, hey, we support the players standing during the national anthem.
Yeah.
Now, one thing, I did a little digging in this yesterday, John, and apparently the Obama administration was paying the NFL to do this years ago. So it's like once they stopped paying them to do this, then players were like, hey, I'm not doing it anymore. So it's this weird thing where players are being duped into this thing of disrespecting the flag openly, thinking they're helping people. But for the longest time, they were only doing it because Obama was making them do it. This has got a lot of little angles to it.
Yeah, it does. The story that I read, I think it was up until 2009, the players were just automatically staying in the locker room for the national anthem.
And yeah, they played the national anthem, and then they ran out on the field with explosions and fireworks and stuff like that.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so now, because the NFL, is it? I guess it's the NFL. It's getting money.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all of a sudden, oh, we got to go out for the national anthem.
And you can't do anything during the game that's disrespectful. You can't wear the different cleats that say, I remember 9/11. You can't do anything like that. But you can kneel and you can do calisthenics during the national anthem, and that's okay.
You can't wear a sticker that commemorates the death of 5 Dallas police officers by Black Lives Matter.
Oh, they didn't pay any money.
You can't even wear the... Exactly.
You can't have a towel that hangs too long. Mm-hmm. On your crotch.
I heard, I probably disagree with him on a lot of stuff, but an ESPN commentator, I don't know his name because I don't watch ESPN, but he was saying, you know, he's like, notice that the coaches and the owners didn't say anything. They said nothing about anything that Trump said. A lot of these guys kneeling now supported Trump, but now they kneel because Trump is threatening their money. Yeah. Now he's coming after him. He's saying, you know, you should fire these guys. He's coming after these people's money, their livelihood, and now they care. It's not a matter of principle for them. They don't care. They don't actually care.
Final thoughts on this, John Rappaport.
The owners come down from their high offices, you know, over the weekend and last night, and they say, here I am. I'm with my boys, right? Then it's over. Then they go back upstairs, and it's business as usual. Where's my money? How much money? I mean, that's, you know, this is not patriotism. This is just, well, I better go down there with the boys, because if I don't, some people are going to think I'm a racist, I'm not supporting them, and it's getting to be kind of a crunch here, so I'll show up, but I'll be back soon. Let's gas up the jet, we'll leave town, and hopefully this thing will blow over until we get back.
Exactly. And that's the interesting thing. Will the NFL survive this? I think this might be the beginning of the end. We've already seen the levels going down. Less people are watching it. You know, 3 hours of time it takes. You've got, hour and a half probably of commercials, and then you got about 6 minutes of actual playing time. That's from No More Fake News, John Rappaport. You can read the open letter to NFL players, : you're being used. You can check him out at nomorefakenews.com. John, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll see him next time. He's a frequent contributor here on The War Room and Real News and The Alex Jones Show. A wealth of information. And we'll be right back after this with Roger Stone. We'll have some statements from Roger Stone on today's House Intelligence hearing. We'll be right back.
The War Room. InfoWars.com/This
is the statement that I am giving right now to the House Intelligence Committee. Because they steadfastly refused to hold this hearing in public and refused to release the transcript, I have no choice but to come here to InfoWars.com so that you can hear precisely what I'm saying to the U.S. House Committee this morning. I'm most interested in correcting a number of falsehoods, misstatements, and misimpressions regarding allegations of collusion between Donald Trump, the Trump associates, the Trump family, the Trump campaign, and the Russian state. I'm no stranger to the slash-and-burn aspects of American politics today. I recognize that because of my long reputation and experience as a partisan warrior, I'm a suitable scapegoat for those who would seek to persuade the public that there were wicked international transgressions in the 2016 presidential election. The members of this committee could not point to any tactic that is outside the accepted norms of what political strategists and consultants do today. I do not engage in any illegal activities on behalf of my clients or the causes which I support. There is one trick that is not in my bag, and that is treason. Multiple members of this committee have made false allegations against me in public sessions in order to ensure that these bogus charges receive maximum media coverage. Now, however, you deny me the very opportunity to respond to these charges in the same open public forum in which they were made. This is cowardly. Given this committee's consistent refusal to allow me to testify in a public session, in the interest of compromise, I repeatedly requested that the transcript of my testimony here today be released immediately upon conclusion of today's session. Even this constructive suggestion has been summarily rejected. What is it you fear? Why do you oppose transparency? What is it you don't want the American people to know? These hearings are largely based on a yet unproven allegation that the Russian state is responsible for the hacking of the DNC and that John Podesta and that the transfer of the information to WikiLeaks. No member of this committee and no intelligence agency can prove this assertion. The Nation magazine recently reported on a study issued by Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, or VIPS, which is comprised of a number of former high-level U.S. intelligence officials. Based on their study, The Nation concluded, and I quote, "There was no hack of the Democratic National Committee system on July 5th, 2016, not by the Russians and not by anyone else. Hard science now demonstrates it was a leak, a download executed with a local memory key or a similar portable data storage device, such as a thumb drive. In short, they reported it was an inside job by someone with access to the DNC's computer system. I also believe, and you should too, my friend Tucker Carlson, who said last week, quote, you should never accept uncritically the imprecise conclusions of the intel community. The mantra-like repetition of the theme by our vaunted 17 intelligence agencies that the Russians colluded with the Trump campaign to affect the 2016 election does not make it so. These are, after all, the very same people who insisted that North Korea would not be able to launch a viable rocket for 3 to 5 years, that insisted Saddam Hussein was in possession of weapons of mass destruction. There was no torture at Abu Ghraib prison, and the government had no metadata collection program, at least until Edward Snowden revealed otherwise. Our intelligence agencies have become politicized. I realize that they are deeply unhappy over President Trump's refusal to expand the proxy war in Syria and their failure to obtain the no-fly zone promised to them by Hillary Clinton, which would have been an open invitation to World War III. That the intelligence agencies have continued to leak to the detriment of President Trump in violation of the law is proof positive of their politicization.
Let's make talk radio great again.
This is the War Room.
And that was just part of Roger Stone's exclusive testimony, his opening testimony that he gave to a House Intelligence Committee hearing this morning, which included people like Trey Gowdy, Adam Schiff, and, well, excluding Trey Gowdy, a bunch of other scallywags. And we have Michael Zerman on the phone, who was there on the scene following Roger, documenting his trip to the Capitol and afterwards what happened, you know, with the press and everybody freaking out and all this intrigue going on, because this is what happens when you have these closed door meetings. But there's also some interesting stuff that came out of it today. Michael, are you there?
I am.
So tell us about, you know, waiting for Roger Stone to come out, what happened afterwards, and what are the biggest revelations that came out of this hearing?
So Stone was in there for, I want to say, about 3.5 hours speaking to them today. Again, closed hearing, so everyone, all the press was outside. This was a lower level of the Capitol buildings, which is why we couldn't go live there. Very poor cell reception, deep in the basements of the Capitol building. And there's actually some secure areas. They were talking to some, apparently Paul Ryan was talking to some general there today, or someone from some high-level officer from the Navy, an admiral. But so this very secure area, the press all had to stay outside. It was kind of interesting because any time that someone was leaving, they would all freak out and, you know, start taking pictures of the door opening. And it's like, oh, no, it's not Stone and his attorneys. So that was interesting to see. But they actually knew Stone was going to be coming out because Trey Gowdy walked out a few minutes before and he would not answer any of their questions. He just walked right past them. He looked upset, which is something I asked Stone about later. And he goes, well, Gowdy was upset. And we actually have a video clip that we'll probably get to in this next segment, or unless
we can do it now. Yeah.
Yeah, let's go ahead and go to that clip.
Let's get to those revelations.
Hello, this is Roger Stone reporting exclusively for InfoWars.com. I testified for the House Intelligence Committee this morning on their ongoing investigation into the Russian collusion delusion. I made it very clear that I knew of no evidence whatsoever that Donald Trump, the Trump family, Trump associates, or the Trump campaign colluded with the Russian state or any representatives of the Russian state in order to impact the outcome of the 2016 election. I specifically denied and pointed to the fact that there was no evidence to the idea that I knew about the hacking of John Podesta's email in advance, that I knew about the content or scope or details of the WikiLeaks disclosures regarding Hillary Clinton in October, or that I had any meaningful dialogue with Guccifer 2.0, pointing out that the content, context, and timing of my limited exchange with someone claiming to be Guccifer 2.0 happened many weeks after WikiLeaks had published the DNC material. But there was enormous breaking news today. When I made the case that I did not believe that the DNC had been hacked by the Russians, in fact, that I did not believe it had been hacked at all, and made the point that the Democratic National Committee had refused to allow the FBI to inspect its servers, instead using a paid-for IT firm called CloudStrike, I was corrected by Congressman Jackie Speier of California, who informed me that she now knew that the DNC had, in fact, turned over their servers to the FBI. This was essentially seconded by Congressman Adam Schiff of California. This came to an extraordinary surprise to Trey Gowdy, the Republican from South Carolina. Mr. Gowdy pointed out to his Democratic colleagues that FBI Director James Comey and Homeland Security Secretary Johnson had both testified under oath to the House Intelligence Committee that the FBI had not been allowed to examine the DNC servers. This is a bombshell revelation. Somebody is lying. It is either Congressman Schiff and Congressman Speier, or, of course, it is Mr. Comey and Secretary Johnson. You won't find this or hear it anyplace else other than here at InfoWars.
Well, there you go. We have the mystery
that's
of the
very
server.
Bombshell information.
Yeah. So do we have it? Do we not have it? I think John Podesta said they did give it at some point. He goes, we did give it during it when people were saying he didn't give it. But yet that has never been made public if they really have. So the Democrats are sneaking around behind closed doors. Isn't this what they got mad at the original when it was Schiff and I forget the guy's name who was the other House, who was head of the House Intelligence Committee. What's that? Well, Devin Nunes, yes. That was Harrison, quick on the draw. They kicked him out for sharing information secretly. And now they have, it looks like, secret information. What the heck is going on?
Well, the important part here is that James Comey said that they had not turned the server over. The story has been all along about CrowdStrike. And now we have two of these representatives saying, oh, no, the FBI's seen it.
Yeah, James Comey and Jay Johnson said that.
And so Roger Stone did a Q&A with the press after the hearing here today, or the testimony, and he did not tell them this. This is exclusive to InfoWars. He's putting that out with us first. This very bombshell information that they accidentally slipped up and have put out there.
Yeah, and so Trey Gowdy is obviously angry about this because they're keeping information from him. I guess is he the next ranking member on that committee on the Republican side?
I would have to check on that. I'm
okay.
Not sure.
Well, so what is Roger doing right now? I know he's been making the rounds all through media. What actually is he doing right now? How is he feeling? He seems to think he scored a victory on this one.
Absolutely. No, it's a huge victory. Roger's in great spirits, but he's actually getting a little rest right now. Because the video you saw earlier in the first five of this hour, we shot at 2 in the morning, and then we woke up at about 6. So I know personally, I came back to the hotel to edit that and didn't get to sleep till about 3:30. So Roger and I were both running on about 2.5 hours of sleep today. Fortunately, I was just waiting for him outside the room there, but he was actually having to testify for hours on end. So Roger's
being
very tired. He's being grilled. So he regrets he can't make it on the War Room today, but he also needs a little rest. Before tonight, we're actually hopefully going to meet up with someone who is a frequent InfoWars contributor and shoot a video with her.
Excellent. Well, you know, he said they tried to put him in some perjury traps, asking him about deleted tweets. Have you ever deleted a tweet before in your life?
Oh,
like,
no.
I don't know. I mean, what?
I would have to ask Twitter.
Thou shalt not delete tweets.
Is Twitter a government document all of a sudden that we're not allowed to delete tweets? I mean,
Roger Stone is not a government employee. Now,
right.
I can understand there's,
exactly.
There's certain things with preservation of data where the president, you know, the at POTUS account, tweets cannot be deleted from that. I believe they're archived because then they are part of the National Archives.
Sure,
it's
and they should
statements
be.
Made by the president. Roger Stone is not the president. Roger Stone is a private citizen and has every right to delete tweets.
Whereas Hillary Clinton wasn't a private citizen when she was wiping servers.
Like with a cloth?
With a cloth, exactly. Exactly. All right, Michael, one final minute. Anything else you want to add? I know you had a creepy reporter stalking you today.
We did. We had Olivia Nuzzi, who used to be with, I believe, Daily Beast, and then now she is with New York Post, I want to say. But she was following Roger around and just on Twitter, just putting a lot of creepy photos of, oh, Roger Stone's taking a photo outside of the Capitol. Roger Stone is walking with InfoWars. Do you not understand that Roger Stone is an InfoWars host? Of course, Roger Stone is with InfoWars.
She looks like a very lonely person, if you look at her picture.
I don't know.
and I use the word promiscuous, meaning she jumps around a lot to different news organizations. So a promiscuous reporter was literally stalking Roger Stone and Michael Zimmerman today.
She was going out there. She was chasing the story, unlike some of these reporters. She was a little too in your face about it.
Well, a lot of the photos were creepy. She was hiding behind bushes and stuff. It's just like, okay, whatever. Hey, thanks for joining us, Michael. We'll be right back after this short break. You're watching The War Room. InfoWars.com/show is the live streams. Yesterday, live on the air, we broke the story that Millie Weaver, our reporter here at InfoWars.com, was doused with urine trying to ask people questions. And then they get back to their car to do a quick update interview with us, and her car's been broken into. In fact, you can see the pictures and read all about it at this article on Infowars.com. Infowars reporter car vandalized, equipment stolen at Berkeley protest. They did get some of the equipment back, but the majority of it is still missing. And she will be coming up, about 20 minutes or so. So stay tuned for that. But first, big sales at InfoWarsStore.com. Don't miss out right now. For a limited time, there's 50% off vitamin mineral fusion formula. And I'll give you a little spiel on this. I used to take a lot of the Longevity Tangy Tangerine. And then when we came out with vitamin mineral fusion, I tried that and I said, whoa, this is way better tasting. And no disrespect to Longevity. I like a lot of their products. But when you compare the two in terms of taste, vitamin mineral fusion blows it away.
That's actually amazing. The next thing on my list that I'm going to try.
It really is good. It's got all your necessary vitamins, minerals, and amino acids. So take advantage of this low price and experience what InfoWars vitamin mineral fusion can do for you. And also, if you want true power, if you want true cleansing, check out Oxy Powder. The first time I did Oxy Powder was, I think, 2 years ago, and it was right around this time. And Alex said, he was talking about it. He said, oh, this Oxy Powder stuff's great. I said, yeah, I took it for 5 days. And he goes, what happened? I said, I lost 12 pounds. He's like, what? Wow. He's like, you don't have a lot to lose. I said, well, you know, I got a little bit of a gut. 12 pounds in 5 days.
No way.
And it was all just stuff that had been stuck inside my guts that was cleaned out with Oxy Powder. And you can experience that yourself. Check it out today. Oxy Powder, InfoWarsStore.com. Also, Alexa Pure Breeze is 20% off. That's the air cleaners that we have all throughout the studios here, all throughout the offices. We keep them on 24/7 because offices are pretty toxic environments. You got the carpet, you got computers, you got printer ink, you got people, you know, it's just everything in there. And the Alexa Pure Breeze is a great way to keep your air clean and fresh. And also the Alexa Pure Pro is 20% off. And all Emrex Essential Packs are 50% off. And this week also, 35% off Brain Force. It's one of our most popular formulas. When you enter the promo code SUPERCHARGE, there it is, Brain Force Plus, enter the promo code SUPERCHARGE and get 35% off. You can check out all those deals and more. I just saw there's a deal on Secret 12 at InfoWarsStore.com. And we'll have Millie coming up to talk about the aftermath of what happened and what's still going on in Berkeley. I think today was the last day of their, supposed to be their free speech week, which got canceled. And I hear they Milo paid for a bunch of venues. They won't return his money. So there's all kind of interesting stuff going on. But this article had me go, whoa, Saudi Arabia agrees to let women drive. Saudi Arabia announced Tuesday that it would allow women to drive, ending a longstanding policy that has become a global symbol of repression of women in the ultra-conservative kingdom. The change will take effect in June of next year and was announced on state television in a simultaneous media event in Washington. The decision highlights the damage that the no-driving policy has done to the kingdom's international reputation, and it hopes for a public relations benefit from the reform. Now, they have a long way to go. They're still chopping people's heads off, chopping people's arms off. In there, funding terrorists, treating women as second-class citizens. I think it's illegal to be gay in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
So this is a step in the right direction. They got a long way to go. But what happened earlier this year? Who went to Saudi Arabia and held the glowing orb?
Evil, evil Donald Trump.
It was evil, evil Donald Trump. He goes to Saudi Arabia and has gotten what no president before him has been able to do. Women are now allowed to drive. Mm-hmm.
Now, this Mike Pence sat in front of the Human Rights Council just a few days ago, and he mentioned the fact, he said, we've got people sitting on the Human Rights Council with a terrible record on human rights. You know, he brought up Venezuela, he brought up Saudi Arabia, all the different countries that, you know, you wouldn't think would even be allowed on there, let alone to actually represent positions of leadership. So, I mean, maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe now that we have an administration that's actually going to go out there and call out these regimes that oppress women and other minorities.
Because there is a danger when you're too political, too politically correct. You don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Right.
Then you don't really say what's on your mind, and it's people don't really know what's on your mind.
It's their culture. We wouldn't want to step on anybody's
exactly,
toes.
Exactly. And so we've had years and decades of this type of behavior where people are afraid to speak their mind. And now we have a president that does it.
Yeah.
And
it's capitulation is really what it is.
Well, half the country's up in a butthurt uproar, which I kind of like.
Yeah. It's good. It's, at least people are angry about something. They're not just sitting, you know, flipping through the channels, bored, not paying attention to anything in the real world. At least they're showing that they care about something in some way.
And here's my thing with the Democrats. Hey, you don't like what Trump's doing? What's your idea? What's your plan? I don't see any plan. What's the plan from Al Green? What's Al Green saying right now?
Well, Al Green is so upset about this new NFL issue that it's just so unpresidential that we're going to impeach Donald Trump because he called NFL players SOBs because he said they should be fired. He said, that's so unpresidential. How dare you? That's the founders loved the NFL.
Democratic Rep Al Green plans to force vote to impeach Trump over NFL comments.
Yep. Al Green.
That's what the Democrats are worried about.
That's an intellectual right there.
That's what they're worried about. Are they worried about making a better health care plan? No, we have to stay with this plan that's screwing half the people that are on it. That's enriching the insurance companies and doubling premiums. We have to hold on to this. This is ours. We're not going to make it better. We're going to keep screwing people. That's what they're saying.
It has dear leader's name in it. How can we ever admit that it's bad? It could never be bad.
And you look at the Republican plan, it's not perfect. But it's way better than Obamacare.
Step in the right direction.
It's opening up competition mm-hmm. between all the states. People can still, they're not going to kick people off their health care. There's plenty of money in there right. to fund people who need it. But by opening up the states to compete with each other, you're going to see lower premiums and you're going to see more choice, which right now some places don't have any choice. The health care plans are moving out because they're saying we can't afford it.
It's so weird because Democrats are the ones, you know, they love to talk about how anti-monopoly they are, anti-big business and all this stuff. Yet they've created state-sanctioned monopolies for these health care companies in these states. It's like, it's completely nonsensical.
And the RINOs are supporting it too because they're the original architects of it. This is Romney Care being repackaged as Obamacare. And they want to keep it. They want to keep America on its heels. And, here's, I think the penalty was going to be, they were going to retroactively go back to 2016 in the new bill and going to say, hey, you didn't have to pay those penalties. So you were going to get paid that money back if you had.
Wow.
I mean, that's pretty amazing.
That's pretty great.
I've never heard of the government retroactively doing anything when it involves giving money back to people. And here's another article that crossed my path. Well, got a little bit of time left. Robot farmers have successfully planted and harvested barley by themselves. Humans have been cultivating plants for some 10,000 years, and for much of that time, they've used the beasts of burdens, or people. Just last century, humans turned from animal strength to machine power. But over the past few years, farms have developed emerging technologies like drones, autonomous driving systems, to make farmers' jobs even less strenuous. But human hands were still needed throughout the process. Now, researchers at Harper Adams University and the agricultural company Precision Decisions have removed humans from the farm entirely in a project called Hands Free Hector. From planting to tending and harvesting, no human stepped foot on the acre and a half barley farm in rural England. It was all done by robot farmers.
The fight for the future is now.
This is The War Room with Owen Schroyer. Watch the live stream
right now
at Infowars.com/show.
I really believe that this is the most deplorable person that I have ever met, seen, or witnessed, let alone run for and become president of the United States of America. It is absolutely outrageous and dangerous what he's doing. He started dog whistling to that constituency during the campaign and started his division. And don't forget, Bannon said, when it's about race, we win because they frighten people. They play into racism. They do what every other president either has attempted not to do or at least showed some signs of, trying to bring people together or not divide. But he is about division. He is about signaling to that core group of his that this country that he wants to make great again is all about making it white. And it's all about saying to them that your troubles, your problems are caused by those people. I'm going to put a travel ban on people who we won't let into the United States of America because they're the ones who are undermining your efforts to do well. He's pointing now to the NFL. We know that the majority of these players are African Americans, and we know what he is doing. We're not tricked or fooled by him in any shape, form, or fashion. And someone said, how is it he can never criticize Putin or the Kremlin or Charlottesville and those KKK, nationalists, supremacists, etc.? And here he is strongly criticizing, you know, football players and NFL players.
Yeah.
And so it's clear. We know who he is. He's defined himself. What are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
I know we're not talking about Russia and collusion today, and we're not talking about obstruction of justice, but I hope people understand it's about all of this that he should not be the president of the United States of America, and we got to get ready for impeachment.
And you know what?
And this is coming from a lady who was voted one of the most corrupt members of Congress by the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics. She doesn't even live in her district, which is one of the poorest in California, if not the entire country. And she also believes she was a millennial once.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Well, that's definitely.
I mean, these people are in bizarro world. Just totally disgusting that they've turned this one comment that Trump said at a political rally into, it's really got everybody hopped up.
Well, it's so,
I don't understand.
It's so insane. Like,
I don't understand.
His comment is racist because obviously only black people can play football. It's clearly a black sport, I guess, right, in their minds, because I don't know how calling somebody an SOB is a racist comment.
And she defends behavior. Let's go to this video right now. Defends behavior of what the left does, throwing pee on people and vandalizing and robbing people. Here's Millie Weaver's report. This happened yesterday.
Oh, my God. Okay, so we're being assaulted with piss right now. I literally just was assaulted with piss. Millie Weaver reporting for Infowars.com. We are here at UC Berkeley, where some students are holding a stand against white supremacy rally here. Now, you can bet your butt that Antifa, by any means necessary, and many other alt-left radical terrorist groups are going to be here marching today. Hello, sir. What brings you out here today?
I'm not going to answer media questions.
So InfoWars is not a welcome media outlet here, so we're going to ask you all to please stay on the outside of the demonstration.
Sorry, who are you?
So we're with the demonstration, and we're going to ask you all not to come into the demonstration. InfoWars is a hostile media outlet here.
So today, I have a question. Are other media sources allowed to be in here? Because I see
so
you've got other media sources.
What I'm going to say to you, we're not going to engage further, okay? InfoWars is not welcome into the demonstration today.
Well, this is a public park, so.
Need your help over here. John, need my
team? Okay. Okay.
I'm sorry,
can I get some muscle in here?
Park,
get some
so
muscle over
we are
here.
The press and we are allowed to walk around and talk to people, sir. So you guys don't believe in free speech, son, right? Okay. Well, you guys can stand here or whatever, but.
Room to the left.
Oh, look! Here they come. Look. Do you see this? Do you see what we're talking about? This is ridiculous. Look at them climbing a wall. Get this. They're climbing a wall. They're climbing a wall.
To what? Is not the place for media to gather on the lawn.
It's a public park.
This is a public park.
Understood. So we're just asking
folks
said
we have the right to be here.
Police just told us to come over here.
We want to keep this peaceful. We're just asking folks to gather on the lawn.
It is peaceful if you guys stop doing what you're doing.
So that would be great if you could just relocate on foot.
Oh, hey. How's it going?
All right.
So I don't understand what. Why are you guys telling me I can't be here?
You can be here.
Because this is the thing. You're going to come off not very well, you know, to the right here if you start acting like cops.
I'm going to explain to you.
You guys.
We were explained to them, so I'm going to explain to you. Okay. Okay. So they're a hostile presence
in a public place.
You guys are actually creating your own self-fulfilling prophecy. You guys are actually making it so that Americans see this anti-First Amendment, because you call yourselves anti-fascist, but in reality, anti-fa is probably more aligned with anti-First Amendment. okay? Because that's what you guys do. You're not going and attacking a big fascist company like Google for censoring people. You're not going and attacking big, giant fascist corporations. Where are you out front of their corporations where they're beating down the little man? No, you guys are preventing a woman journalist from going and just talking to people.
And I generally side with the left, but you guys are making the point for Trump 2020. I think this kind of behavior is only playing up for InfoWars and Fox News and the Breitbarts of the world.
You guys are just helping us. You're helping us. I'm telling you. So thank you. Thank you, guys. You guys are the gift that keeps on giving. Don't do that. Seriously.
Block them out.
You just hit me with your bike, sir.
You know, that's what they do. When they can't argue with you, they just shut it down. That's why they shut down Milo. They shut down on culture. I'm talking now. And this is what they do. That's what the left does. They don't argue. They just shut down.
Okay, so they're chanting, bigot, 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 out, out, out. Bigot, 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 out, out, out.
Conservative intellectuals like to talk about Jordan Peterson and cultural Marxism. You know, the thing is about cultural Marxism and the idea of postmodernism. You're giving them everything they want because you're living up to the postmodern ideology. I don't believe that it's 100% true, but you are making their case for the conservative quote-unquote intellectuals.
I'm solely here to tell stories from all sides, and I was able to interview people on the right wing very, very easily, and I'm a bit confused as to why there's so much you know, protection and security here. I mean, it's the freedom of the First Amendment. I mean, it's about being able to interview people and being able to share stories.
What do you think? Hey.
Fascists go home. Fascists go
home. Hey, don't touch me, man.
Fascists go home.
What do you think about?
Fascists go home. Fascists go home. Fascists go home.
We're being assaulted with piss, so we're going to back up over here.
This guy's all freaking driving at us. Thinks it's funny.
Oh my God. Okay, so we're being assaulted with piss right now. I literally just was assaulted with piss. Somebody tried to run their car at us. We have had people come and assault. Somebody rammed their bike into my leg while we're here, all because they don't support the First Amendment.
So these are the people that Maxine Waters and Al Green and all these scumbags who have just lived off of everybody else's hard work, this is who they support. They support the shutdown of free speech, and they're coming after your free speech next. Just remember that. And we're going to have Millie Weaver up next after this break, so stay tuned for that. Infowars.com/show is where you can find the streams. You're going to hear it straight from the horse's mouth, right from the reporter who had piss knocked on her, who was being hit by bikes, who was being intimidated by giant men because she has questions.
How dare
she?
Oh,
my goodness. We'll be right back. Millie Weaver on the other side of the break. Infowars.com/show. Spread that link now. Coming up right after the break. Reporter assaulted with piss for asking questions. So last segment, we showed Maxine Waters calling for the impeachment of Trump for all these horrible things he's done. And then we go to what the left is really like, and we see them stopping reporters from asking questions. They're being labeled as, what do they call them?
Hostile.
We've got the hostile reporter coming up. Millie Weaver's coming up in just a second. And then they blocked her with bikes, threw pee at her.
It's interesting.
Intimidator of these giant, tall, bald guys.
Even this happened to me and Owen here in Austin, but the funny thing is they always build a wall. A human wall. They always build walls. Yeah.
Walls work.
They're very effective.
And we have joining us via Skype in the Berkeley area right now, Millie Weaver, reporter for InfoWars.com. Millie, how are you doing today?
Well, we're doing pretty good today. You know, yesterday was all out madness at UC Berkeley, getting into it with these Antifa communists. They actually had the bear logo for UC Berkeley with anti-fascists on there. They were clearly communists, although I couldn't get them to actually admit to being communists or who they were because most of them didn't want to talk to us, but they were wearing communist symbols. They had a red ribbon around their left arm.
I noticed that the armbands.
Trait that they're communists.
Right. They had those armbands. Yes. It's totally like.
I've seen those somewhere else.
Yeah.
I don't know where that is.
Armbands. Huh. Interesting. Continue, yeah, Millie. So, how did they treat you yesterday?
Well, they certainly didn't have manners. I was cursed at. I was screamed and yelled at by a man there, a couple of them actually. And I said, where'd you learn your manners from? Your parents didn't teach you how to talk to a woman. And then I had this other, I guess, I don't know what you would call it, non-binary woman. I think it's a woman born as a woman trying to look dress like a man. But she said, he's talking to you as an equal. So I'm like, oh, so talking to me as an equal means cursing and yelling at me and degrading me. That's good to know. You know, I would rather be talked to as a woman than if it means cursing and yelling and screaming at me. That's talking to me as an equal. So they treated me horrible. I had urine thrown on me. They wouldn't let me go in and just simply ask questions because they were terrified of a well-informed woman with a microphone going out there asking hard questions.
Yeah, they seem to freak out. But I believe, had you gone in there dressed as Rainbow Snatch, your alter ego social justice warrior character, they would have probably invited you with open arms. It would have been fine. Oh, we love it. Can we talk about 4,000 genders? Can we, you know, what? Can we talk about how the NFL is correct with kneeling? I mean, it would have been you would have had a field day there. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I'm sure I would have been treated very different if I went dressed as Rainbow Snatch. However, I do feel like Rainbow Snatch is pretty known, and I think that Antifa and BAM and some of these well-organized organizations might know about Rainbow Snatch, or, you know, Rainbow Snatch almost got beat up by some giant, I don't know what you would call them, they were like big transgender women trying to be men, and that was at the LGBTQ dance freakout. In Austin, Texas, they almost
degenerate is a good word for
because
those.
I think one of them was upset because Rainbow Snatch went and tried to interview its partner without asking its permission.
How dare you?
There's some pretty weird hierarchies going on within that community. And if you don't know the lingo, you don't know the codes and the rules, you're likely to end up in deep water. And one of the things that I noticed that was happening is they're so caught up on language and labeling things, and they get really caught up on that.
Yeah, I think it comes from being left in their diapers, their crap-filled diapers, as Jones likes to say, watching TV, and they're watching Sesame Street, and they're saying, this is a box, this is a transgender, this is a shoe, and they learn how to label things, and if they don't label things correctly, you know, then Oscar the Grouch yells at them, so they learn very quickly
how to label. They're institutionalized almost, you know.
Right. And they've got to beat in their head that they can change the world. Oh, you can do anything you want. You can go out. You can be whatever you want to be. And you get a participation medal for everything. So these are basically a bunch of kids walking around with participation medals. We are stopping the system. We're stopping the patriarchy. And they're in this one little area of Berkeley that, you know, you don't see them many other places. They're big in Berkeley and on the West Coast. I saw them all over California. But then you get into the heartland.
Well, there's a reason they're big on those attacks in Berkeley.
Yeah, why is that?
Well, what was interesting is some random guy came up to us the other day and he's like, hey, do you want to see where all the communist leaders are meeting at right now? Literally like conspiring and wargaming Milo's Free Speech Week. I'm like, okay. I was a little skeptical, a little bit nervous. Like, who is this guy? I don't want to be led into a trap.
Right.
But we ended up going there with a group of Trump supporters. And sure enough, we go to this communist bookstore. And lo and behold, there's a bunch of commie leaders. And these people all looked like they were older, and mostly all of them were white, ironically. And they were watching a video of Milo Yiannopoulos' speech from earlier that day, where Milo had been disrupted by an agent that was going in there screaming and yelling and trying to talk over him, which made it nearly impossible for him to carry on with speaking. That's why his speech got cut so short. But what was interesting is they were all reviewing this footage and cheering, and we all came up, and what this guy told me is that these are a bunch of old Soviet Russian commies that literally have been here for a while, and they're essentially trying to groom up a new generation of communists to push this commie revolution. And that's why you see this huge commie presence in UC Berkeley. He said, look into BAM by any means necessary and Antifa, and that basically this revolutionary bookstore is how they're funding their operation. And we don't know if that's necessarily by book sales or if it's a way to launder money through the bookstore, but all of these people.
And notice how they're using, we're watching some of the video right now, they're using their phones, their smartphones, the technology created by capitalists to show what's going on. And then they're using the internet created by, there's not a lot of internet going on in North Korea.
Exactly. And some of these
not that
people,
I know of.
Some of these people might very well be alumni and faculty at UC Berkeley. It would not surprise me one bit. So I'm interested to see what the sleuths of the internet find with this video footage, because if they actually were to look at some of these people's faces and match them up with professors or university staff, you might find something pretty alarming because they seem to have a hold on this community. Another thing that was interesting is that during this end white supremacy march, protest, whatever you want to call it, all of the police were wrapped up with that. So there were planned crimes that went on where the police had to deal with a crime spree going all around where there was, you know, problems. So that the police were wrapped up with Berkeley. So it was a way to take advantage of that situation there with the police.
Well, sure, that's the plan. You start a fire somewhere and then you go rob a bank on the other side of town.
Right. And that fits right in. You mentioned something very interesting about the Soviet communist. One thing that a lot of people don't know is if you look up Yuri Bezmenov on YouTube, he was a KGB propaganda minister and he defected to the United States. And he actually went on TV and laid out the entire plan that Soviets go through to infiltrate and destabilize countries. And it fits exactly. If you look at the history of the United States starting about the 1950s, it fits exactly that plan. But then you see the Soviet Union fell in the late 80s, early 90s. So now they have this infiltration, this communist indoctrination in schools and everything throughout society. But there's no guiding hand in the Soviet Union. It's just utter chaos. These commies just, you know.
So they come to America and go, oh, we can exploit these rich, spoiled brats.
So essentially what you have is you have these older people who have established themselves in positions as teachers, faculty, positions in the city to be seen as authoritative figures so that then they can gain the rapport and the confidence of the young college students that have such moldable, impressionable minds. And that's why you have these college students out there going and doing the dirty work. And essentially, they can't answer the questions. They're like a cult of mindless zombies following along with the cult leader's instructions, and none of them will break from the mold. They won't have conversations with you. They won't even question it openly because it's like a conformist pack where if you so much as cater or cave slightly to the enemy, which the enemy is Trump supporters or InfoWars or anyone they've labeled as the hostile enemy, well, then you then become shamed and outcast amongst your little cult.
That's true. And that's how that formula is going to continue. It's not going to stop. We're up against the break. Millie, I got a guest coming up, but thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. I'm sorry you had to go through that. But what you're doing is illustrating the insanity that we have to go up against every day. So, you know, everybody goes through that and it sucks, but you guys stood strong. You stood tall. We're making videos about this. We're showing people. Show the destruction. Go read the article right now.
The silent majority is no longer silent. This is the War Room with Owen Schroyer at Infowars.com/show.
Bitch off the field right now. Out. He's fired.
We have breaking news tonight in the war between Donald Trump and the NFL.
There is an unmistakable racial element to this story.
It's hard to ignore the racial component here. The president went on this jag on Friday night in front of a largely white audience.
That is racism. You cannot deny it. You cannot run for it. And I kneel in honor of them.
A lot of talk now about coded language. You think about what he said, disrespecting our heritage, we, to that largely white crowd. I think there's a lot of folks out there that look at this and say, what are you really trying to say here?
This feels like a culture war that's exploding right before our eyes.
Is he trying to wage something of a culture war?
Not at all. The president's not talking about race. The president's talking about pride in our country. What you saw yesterday were players and fans of all races joining together as Americans to honor our service members. That's what the president's talking about. That's what his focus is on.
You're not going to find many voices of support outside his base, his extreme base, for these remarks.
So we have a white supremacist president of the United States.
The president of the United States chose to pull the sheets off and reveal himself.
He thinks apparently that he is the slave master of black people in the NFL.
He wants us to be kneeling in the cotton fields again.
The idea that this doesn't have something to do with race is preposterous.
This country that he wants to make great again is all about making it white.
His whole thing is, when was America, make America great again. Now we see that 1817 is more likely when he's thinking about America being great, as opposed to us kneeling on behalf of righteousness and justice.
The national anthem is not a white supremacist symbol, and the president has become...
Some of the words of the national anthem are supremacist.
You think the national anthem is racist?
I think this is a country whose history is racist, whose history is steeped in white supremacy, and the anthem reflects that in its
very
words.
Well, it's also
hard to believe that... I'm going to say something about the most powerful man in the greatest country in the world, but probably like a lot of you, I was somewhat surprised that the president of the United States came out attacking NFL players for them exercising the freedom of speech.
Because that's a total disrespect of our heritage. That's a total disrespect of everything that we stand for, okay? Everything that we stand for.
All right, Lisa, as they take a knee collectively, boos can be heard from this sellout crowd in Arizona.
I'm not sure if our president understands those rights, that every American has the right to speak out and also to protest.
As a white father having raised three boys, there were a million things to worry about on a daily basis. But it's impossible for me to truly understand the challenges that an African-American father faces at every turn while raising his children.
It's like you're at the 50 meter mark in a 100 meter dash. And you got that kind of a lead. Yes, because you were born white, you have advantages that are systemically, culturally, psychologically, there. And they've been built up and cemented for hundreds of years.
A lot of these players, they've got feelings, they've got emotions, they've got opinions, and many of the players I spoke to feel that their voice is not being heard. And more specifically, that the president's comments on Friday, particularly calling them SOBs, were a slap in their face. One of the things, though, about football is that it always has a way of kind of unifying us and pulling us together. We hope that this unity that spread throughout the league yesterday will spread throughout America in the weeks and months to come.
When people like yourselves turn on television and you see those people taking the knee when they're playing our great national anthem, the only thing you could do better is, if you see it, even if it's one player, leave the stadium. I guarantee things will stop. Things will stop. Just pick up and leave. Pick up and leave. Not the same game anymore.
Let's make talk radio great again.
This is the War Room.
Live for the final hour of War Room. Just the final hour today, though. We'll be back tomorrow, 3 p.m. Central to 6 p.m. Central. You can find all the live streams at Infowars.com/show, or you can go to warroom.show, and I think it has links to our Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, everything that we're out there on social media. And I'm joined by my co-host,
Jake Lloyd.
There you go. wanted to let you talk a little bit. I feel like I've been hogging everything. Now, my next guest, I think this is his first time on one of the InfoWars Live shows. He's a businessman who runs a variety of Facebook pages, the main one being WTF Magazine. And you can find out more information about him at jasonfyk.com, jasonfyk.com. And he's got a new book out, Mags to Riches, which hopefully can inspire some of you kids out there sitting on the couch how to get off your butt and do something with your life instead of just sitting around and waiting for, you know, the next job to come through or going to college and going in debt. Jason's going to tell you how he did it. And then how, after he became very successful on Facebook, what happened, what Facebook did to him in the process. So, Jason, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Rob. And Jake, thanks for having me on.
Excellent, excellent. So let's start with your story. It happened back in the mid-2000s. You've kind of hit, you know, go through hitting rock bottom and then building yourself back up. Let people know where you're coming from.
Well, I had sort of a unique situation, something that most people haven't dealt with in life. I had just started the magazine, and I really didn't know what I was doing at the time. I was just looking to do something, you know, that would entertain and be fun for people. And my first interview in Baltimore, and at the end of it, some people got into a fight. I, like any normal reporter, publisher, anything, would just pull out a camera and document it. At the end of it, what it turned out was is that one of the people that was in that fight was related to police in Baltimore. They had family members, kind of high ranking, and what was essentially a misdemeanor, stupid little brawl in a parking garage where I never actually touched anybody. I was never in the fight itself. I was 30 feet from it. I got charged with conspiracy to commit first degree attempted murder, having done nothing. Now, the First Amendment should have covered me, but it didn't. It was clear that the city was corrupt. It was clear that there was personal agendas involved and so forth, which put me in jail. They actually denied me bail. They said that I was apparently a threat to society, even though I had never been arrested. And I surrendered myself. It just didn't make any sense. It was purely corruption. And unfortunately, you know, most people don't ever actually get to experience that. But when they do, they realize it exists. So what that did to my life was it shut the magazine down. They had taken all my equipment. You know, you were just saying earlier about how they took some of your equipment and it cripples you. When you're doing this kind of business and your equipment disappears, you're out of luck. So at that point, most of my employees, you know, kind of walked away because they didn't know what to do. And it shut me down. Between the costs of attorneys and spending 2 months not making any money and so forth, it ran me completely empty. I had no money left. And when I got out of this situation, and obviously when an actual real judge looked at it, they looked at it and said, what did he do wrong? Because I hadn't broken any laws.
Yeah, filming isn't a crime. Correct.
Filming's not a crime. But the thing is that it still breaks your life. It still, at the end of the day, if you end up in jail for no reason at all, and this is the, you know, the plight of Black Americans, white Americans, anybody that gets arrested, it wrecks your life. You were always in the system. You always having to deal with it. It's horrendous. But I'm just the type that I've been beat down a lot in my life, and I just keep getting up. And in that circumstance, I had no money. And I remember the days when I wasn't sure how I was going to feed my child. My house was being taken. I was at the absolute lowest point in my life. Yes, I was not in jail, which was a great thing, but it doesn't mean that you're not completely broke and everything's gone. That was when I turned to social media. And my initial investment into social media was I wanted to tell my story. People needed to know that this stuff exists. And that is what social media grants to all of us. It grants it to you, to Alex, to me. Everybody has a voice. And the problem with that, though, is that it is controlled by one company right now. And only a few very, very large companies control most of social media. So we go out there and we try to get our point across. It starts to get censored. It starts to get reduced. And I'll actually use their own terms, at their sole discretion. What that discretion is, I'm not really sure. Sometimes I think it's arbitrary. But where I was at in life is that I wanted to get my message out, and I started writing a book. My book is Mags to Riches. And it basically documents as accurately as I could what all the events were as to what happened. Now, the irony here is that I wasn't actually planning to build a social media business. I got into social media simply to tell my story. And the result of that was I needed to build a distribution list, because that's what social media marketing is. It's what affiliate marketing is. It's the voice. It's the ability for, and I'll be honest, I am a guy from a little town called Cochranville. It's in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. I would have never thought in a million years I'd be doing this.
But and distribution, like you said, is the key to every business. Beer companies, exactly. Car companies. You got to get your stuff to the people. And you know what you said there, talking about how at their sole discretion, Matt Drudge was here in our studio a couple years ago, actually 2 years ago next month, and said, basically, we're all living in these internet ghettos. Twitter, Facebook, these are all built to, hey, come on in. Look how great it is in here. Come on. You want a sample? And they get you in, get you addicted. It's sort of like drug dealing, but on a different level, like mind drug dealing. And then they go, hey, now we're going to control what you can say, and you got to say it within these parameters. Exactly. Well, that's just my little bit.
It's exactly that. What they're doing is they're coming in, and the funny thing is I was actually explaining this to a farmer, believe it or not, because he just wasn't catching on what they had done to the nation as well as myself. And I tried to explain it like this, is that social media is like a landowner. They own all this land. And I said, in your terms, it would be like a farm that didn't have fertile ground. And what they said was, hey, look, you know what? We'll let you use that ground for free. Come on in, build your little farms, try to get the land back, and you can have yourself a farm. Except for the fact that when those little guys came in, like I did, and we started the farm and we started to fix that land, they realized, well, now this land is actually fertile, so we can go to the larger farmers, like the ag companies, who will pay us to use that land. So what they then did is they said, well, you know what? We don't want you using the stream water anymore. So now what we're going to do is that you have to bring your own water in. Well, the littlest farmers that were dependent upon those streams, they can't grow the crops anymore. So their land gets to the point where they can't do anything with it, and the landowner takes it back, and he gives it to the ag company. Then what happens is the guys that, you know, could deal without the stream, the guys that are like sort of mid-level social media guys, they continued on with the new rules. And then they realized, well, you know what? We want that land too. So now we're going to make it illegal to, let's say, plant during half of the year. Well, that's when some of the crops have to grow. So those guys now get kicked out of their land because the rules just changed on them. Now, meanwhile, you can't find another property. There's nowhere else to go. You have to be on yours because that's all you built. And the landowner comes in and keeps changing the rules. Well, now they give that to the ag company. Now the larger guys that are still on the land that have been successful in farming their properties, just like social media, I built a large audience. They said, man, we just can't get rid of these guys. So you know what? You can't use water anymore. You can't plant seeds. You can't harvest. You can't use machinery. Good luck farming.
Exactly. Hey, stay right there, Jason. We're going to go to a break real quick. We'll be right back on the other side. Got another 10-minute segment coming up. And we're going to break it down how Facebook basically has taken away your farm now by just saying, hey, sorry, you can't do anything. We'll be right back. It's The War Room. You're watching at Infowars.com/show.
Welcome back to The War Room. My name is Jake Lloyd. I'm joining Rob Dew today, filling in for Owen Schroyer as he's on vacation. Today we're joined by Jason Fike talking about the recent epidemic of censorship on the internet, particularly social media. Now, Jason, it's interesting. It's kind of a paradoxical problem that they've created, because the appeal of social media was that everybody has a voice, everybody can put their own ideas out there, their different thoughts, and give a face to their own name, really. Now, to carry on with the analogy that you gave earlier, you'd built up kind of your own farm on Facebook, and then they came along and didn't like what you were doing with it, and they seized it. Can you go ahead and elaborate on that?
Yeah, actually, I can back up a little bit because it's more rampant now, but it actually happened to me a long time back, and I saw it coming. If you recall, the presidential election prior to this one, between Obama and Mitt Romney, I had a page that had almost 1 million fans that was anti-Obama. It was definitely supporting Mitt Romney. And it's the kind of thing you could blame it on whatever you want to blame it on. But the night before the election, the page was deleted. Not unpublished, deleted. Could be coincidence, or it could just be straight out. They said, push that button, done, bye. Because back then there was no way that, you know, people would even notice it disappeared. Nowadays, when things start to disappear, people are starting to notice because they're shutting so many things down. And one of the things that I do want to bring up that is absolutely vital that people need to understand is probably one of the most important topics that may be being overlooked a bit. If social media is fully controlled, we will never, ever win an election again. The people won't have the say because the people are the ones that are on social media being able to express their individual, you know, ideas and the diversity of it and, you know, express their distaste, their you know, like you said, with the First Amendment, you should be able to hate people. You should be able to dislike people. You should be able to disagree with their opinions and it still matter. And I respect the fact that they have those opinions. If we lose that ability through social media because the larger companies are essentially whittling this down to a few large companies and sponsorship ads, well, it's not social media anymore. It's just industrial media.
It's an internet
honestly,
ghetto.
I think that right there. Yeah. That's exactly right. It becomes the internet ghetto.
And we're definitely living in those times. Like, I think we're past the golden age of free speech and open thought and open discourse. Because I think we've hit to the level of two opposing viewpoints, and one is based a little more on fact and reason, and the other one's based on emotion. And they've hit, and people on the emotion side are realizing they're not right. Just because they feel that way doesn't make it right. And now they're going, the only way we can win is by rigging the system, and that's what we've got. So continue with your story, Jason. I mean, what happened to you going into this election?
So going into this election, I was working with several conservative pages. Obviously, over the years, I built up a lot of connections within social media. So it is kind of interesting because even if I was to be shut down, I have so many connections out there that I can just reach out to that, you know, I can get the word out there. But we were working as a group, and many people don't realize this, but we were the heaviest push. I've been asked not to drop names just because we don't want to bring too much attention to it. But several of the very, very large conservative pages that are out there are all friends of mine. And we were pushing, obviously, to support Trump. And if we are stifled for the next election, meaning they just start to destroy our pages and shut our reach down, just like, you know, you guys have seen it as well, you know, through InfoWars and the War Room, I'm sure. If we are stifled, they're rigging the system. Just like you said, they're rigging the system. We cannot fight back. And this is one of those things that, you know, I expressed this to you, Rob, was I would love to have the ability to just say to Mr. President that they need to do something about it, whether it be turn it into a utility where there's requirements and regulations on it, but they need to free it up. They need to free up the ability for people to get on, express their feelings, their emotions, their opinions without being bastardized. That's really what social media is right now. It's so vital to the way that we are as people. It's not going away. It's kind of like, remember when the .com came out? It was like, oh, those computer things, that'll be a phase. No, it won't. Social media here is here to stay. The question is it all going to be one controlled socialism media? Well, there's a name for you, socialism media. Or
that is good.
Yeah, industrial media, socialism media, there you go. But unless we get a handle on it and he gets a handle on it, do something about it, You know, I have some ideas and so forth that, you know, I've discussed with some of the people that I know about how we can sort of fight back. But we're kind of on our own here because we don't have the connection to get the things done.
Well, and it's gone from the government and government regulation, like keeping people down and oppressed. Now the corporations are just willingly doing it. They're working with other governments. Openly. And they're going, you know, Facebook works with China and says, hey, what do you want to be censored? What do you want censored? We'll do it for you. Don't worry. Don't worry. Just let us in. Just let us in because we want those dollars. And we know for a fact that, you know, the reason Facebook hides the way it does its ads and this whole ad business that came out, this 3,000 ads that was for $100,000 that changed the election somehow. You know, we know if we actually saw these algorithms, those ads didn't do diddly squat. It was the people that came together. And that's the one way to beat that is people power can beat this social media, this socialism media.
Mm-hmm. It's guys like me that went out there and used our pages to support Trump. And even though, I mean, and trust me, I mean, my pages were getting beat up at the same time because, of course, you nailed it. The emotion of liberals, they would come in and, oh, this page is, you know, gosh, you can't gotta go political. Well, the fact is that we do need to talk about this stuff. You know, it was funny I actually flew in from Florida this afternoon, and I was speaking with the Uber driver, and we were talking about this whole scenario of emotion. She said, well, if everybody looked inward, you know, and just fixes themselves, the world will fix itself. And I thought to myself, No, we have to get involved. We have to involve ourselves with everybody else because just like I sat in a Baltimore jail, if I hadn't have fought back, I mean, now, if you think about it, here I am with, you know, in 2012 with 9 million fans. It was kind of a crazy time. And I'll sort of drop one thing out there. It was kind of a funny story. In 2012, I was sitting and I don't know, this is kind of a little bit off topic, but I was sitting, but it is the strength of social media. I was sitting in a bar with a buddy of mine, one of my best friends. And I said to him, I was like, we were just talking about stuff here and there. And we were talking about religion. And he says, yeah, but you can't kill God. I thought to myself, why not? So I searched God on Google and pulled up a picture of Morgan Freeman playing God, killed him off. Now, I didn't expect it to quite go as crazy as it was because this is before people have realized that you can lie on the internet.
Fake news, right.
I think that part of this entire show is trying to point out you can lie on the internet. You can lie as a politician. You can lie as a political figure. You can lie. People need to question everything.
Stay right there, Jason. We're going to break. I'll let you finish up. We'll close out this interview and finish up the show. I got Jack Posobiec coming in too. You're watching The War Room, Infowars.com/show. Don't go away.
Making talk radio great again. It's The War Room with Owen Schroyer at Infowars.com/show.
Final half hour of the War Room. We're being joined in the studio by Jack Posobiec, who's come to visit us here in the Infowars.com studio, Central Texas Command Center, for the last couple days. He was on the Alex Jones Show today. He's going to have an update on the Roy Moore Luther Strange race coming up, because we do have an update on that and what's going on, and some other news. It looks like another piece of the swamp is draining himself, which is kind of what we want. We want these people to go on their own way. We don't want to have to force them to go. And we still have our guest on the line, Jason Fike, author of Mags to Riches, his new book, From Jail to Social Media Millionaire. And he's got quite a story. We've been going over it. I just want to direct you guys to this Business Insider article, which I think it's from 2014, but it sheds a lot of light on what he went through. How a man once bankrupt and in jail used Facebook to become a millionaire, and all the things he's gone through. He's talked about how pages of his were just vanishing from the internet ghettos. And he was finishing up on a story about how he literally killed God. He found the image of Morgan Freeman and said, hey, this guy's dead, and put it out there. And sure enough, Jason, what happened after you put that meme out?
Well, I had shared it initially on like one of my pages, and back then, you know, they didn't have the restrictions in the algorithm. So it just took off. And then people are like, oh my God, he's dead. Because of course he's actually one of my favorite actors. That's kind of why it was, a tribute to him in a way. But we cross shared it to, all of our other pages, and it just took off. And next thing I know, mainstream media was putting it out. It was everywhere. And I actually at one point started to get a little worried, because I was like, oh, did I do something wrong? Because it was a joke. I mean, it wasn't meant maliciously or anything else like that. But the power of social media was clear. And actually, in irony, you show that that article from Business Insider, and one of the first things on there, it says funnierpicks.net. Funnier Picks, the Facebook page, has been shut down by Facebook. 3 million plus fans, gone. And all we did was entertain people. But it's gone.
Well, it depends on how you're entertaining them. Are you doing it within the confines of the new social media strata?
Is that state-approved entertainment?
I was going to say, can I actually answer that correctly? The answer is nobody is doing anything within the confines of terms of service or rights and responsibilities. Everything that you post on Facebook is against Facebook regulations. Like, there's nothing that they can't determine to be spam or somehow it's attacking some group. This right now, they'll say, well, this is, some sort of violation. The fact of the matter is that, yes, in the normal terms, if you said, were you doing stuff that was right or wrong? Yeah. I mean, it was just normal, funny stuff. We made fun of things, we joked, and we kidded around, but none of it was done maliciously. But yet, page gets shut down. Why? And the funny thing is, it's yes, it hurts me in a way, because I own the page, but at the same, or I run the page, I should say. But it hurts the viewer, because they don't get to see what they enjoyed. The whole experience of social media has changed from get on, laugh, have fun. Did you see this? Did you see that? To, man, Russians, everybody's involved and everybody's corrupt. And it's just terrible now. You don't come back away from social media in a good mood.
And it's all gone from making things viral, like wanting things to go viral, like showing the power of what it is, because, lots of people grab it and share it with their friends. And now it's gone to, now we're going to build algorithms that only show to part of your audience because we don't want to overload them with information. Oh, and that has stuff that we don't want anybody to see. So we're just going to curtail that. And we're just going to put this post in the dark zone and shadow ban it. You've had to deal with shadow banning. Is that correct?
I have. At one point I was dealing with it on Twitter, where every single post that I posted was considered censored. I posted a picture of my dog and they censored it and said, oh, we can't have this picture of the dog. This is sensitive content. And I realized, so what they had done is they'd actually gone in automatically on my Twitter account and changed the settings. And apparently there's a setting in Twitter that says, mark all my posts as sensitive.
Wow. And so they did that.
And they did that for you. Why does that even exist in the first place? I mean, what possible thing could you be? I don't want to get into that, but
that is truly amazing. Go ahead, Jason.
Funny story. Yeah. Do you know that I actually got banned once I did a screenshot of a Disney scene, and it was in Pocahontas, and Pocahontas came out and it said something about the white men, and it was taken down as a ban for racism. It was a Disney scene, like an actual scene from the Disney movie Pocahontas. And it's just like, where are the limits? Everything can be constituted as, against their terms of service. But what my hope and goal, I guess, in coming on here and trying to get the word out is that there needs to be change. If somebody does not do something to stop it, and this is really kind of directed at our president, we have the opportunity at the moment. We need to make some changes with regards to social media, or all is lost. I mean, truth be told, in a few years, they will control everything that we do, because there just simply isn't any other outlet.
And you've got Zuckerberg out there saying, we're going to be looking out for bad content and how we can stop bad content. What does that even mean? He didn't say illegal. He said bad content. That should scare everybody. Because everybody puts out bad content on Facebook.
Yeah, it means, two, keep in mind, his Facebook Live was bad content. Did you see that thing? It was terrible.
Yeah, no, it was hard. He sounded like a robot. So, but that's the kind of thing we have to worry about. They put these subjective terms out there and go, well, we can say anything's bad. We can say anything is racist. Like your cartoon that you put out, a picture of a Disney cartoon is now suddenly racist.
Hey, guy.
I mean, it's ridiculous. It never ends. Jason, tell people where they can find out more information on your book and where your best site is. I guess WTF Magazine seems to be your favorite place where people go.
Well, we stopped doing the website stuff. We pretty much stay to social media because that was my forte. But if you're just interested in my personal story, I have my website at jasonfick.com. The book, obviously, Mags to Riches, is about it, is about what all happened to me with the corruption on that side. And I am working on a second book, which will tell a lot more about how I came back from, I guess, sort of the dregs of society. I was down at the bottom. But my second book is yet to be officially titled, but I'm working on it at the moment. And it should explain how the social media blew up. And it's actually going to explain how the social media has been changing over time and the control that that Facebook and many of the other companies are putting in and what to do about it.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Jason. I'm sure this won't be the last time you're on Infowars.com's War Room. I'm sure we'll get you on the Alex Jones Show soon enough. And thank you for joining us and telling your story, because we have to speak out and we have to stand together in this new face of censorship. Would you agree?
Absolutely. The only way we can do this, and when one of us goes down, when one of us gets censored, I love how there's such a sense of community that people will actually come together and say, why did Facebook take X down? Why did Twitter take this person? Why did they suspend them? They never said anything bad. They never put anything up, racist, hatred, bigotry. And we always stand against that. We're kind of self-policing in a community. And I love that so many people are standing up and calling it out when someone goes down.
Your thoughts, Jared?
It's incredibly important that we do that, because Facebook, Google, YouTube, all these other companies aren't going to police themselves. The government is not coming in to do it right now. They're not coming in to make sure that People's First Amendment is being properly represented. So we are the last vanguard in the fight for free speech on the internet. We have to make sure that we're standing up for other people, calling out these big companies whenever they do make these decisions to censor people.
And that mentality of censorship on social media, as you can see it happening in the real world. We saw with Millie Weaver's report earlier today where they were forming walls to keep her from asking people questions. They were deathly afraid of questions being asked at this peaceful rally that was throwing urine on reporters. So we've hit a new level. I mean, it's just, and now we have the NFL getting involved into it. We really are in crazy times. I did not think we'd be talking about the NFL 2 weeks ago.
Got to protecting from Millie, as dangerous, as threatening as Millie is.
Yeah. Dangerous blonde in the area.
Yeah, she's like 5'2".
All right, we'll be right back with the final segment. We're going to get those election updates, and we got more news. So stay tuned. Infowars.com/show is the free stream. Spread that out to everybody you know. Final segment of the War Room. We have the trio here: Rob Dew, Jack Posobiec, Jake Lloyd. I did that right, even with
there we go.
The reverse of
there.
Looking at the video and having it be reversed. So, final segment of the War Room. We have some interesting developments going on in the Luther Strange Roy Moore race for Senate. This could be another big blow, especially if we get in a real Trumpian in there, somebody who has the American first mindset, somebody who has the American first drive, somebody who obviously is a proponent of the Second Amendment. He pulled out a gun at a rally, which
Roy Moore, when he showed up to vote today, he was wearing a cowboy hat and rode a horse. He rode a horse to the polls today.
There's nothing more Texas than that.
I know this. Yeah, I mean, it's like you think he's in Texas, but no, he's running in Alabama. And it's like this guy, first of all, he should be elected just based on his memes alone. Based on his memes alone, he should already win the Senate because he's got much better memes. But in all seriousness, the first exit polls have started to come in. Now, we saw the polling earlier in the week. It looked, there were some polls that had him 16, 11 points ahead. Every poll just about has had more ahead in this race. And I should say that's even from mainstream polls, from internal polls. Even last night, it looked like Moore was up 11 points over Luther Strange, who is supported by Mitch McConnell, who's very much the seen as the swamp candidate himself, a former lobbyist. Roy Moore, on the other hand, grassroots conservative. He'd been a chief justice, actually, in Alabama. Looks like he is going to take the win, despite the fact that Trump endorsed Strange. Now, Trump is basically saying, look, strange was for me on my legislation, on different votes.
Voted
he was
with
always
me.
There for me. He always voted for me. And that's why I gave him the endorsement. I wanted to send a message to other senators that I will have your back if you go for my legislation. But when it came down to it, the people of Alabama said, okay, we appreciate your endorsement, but we think this guy actually stands for the Trump agenda as opposed to the McConnell guy. And that is a huge upset in terms of explaining how the Trump movement works. A huge upset. Even if Moore didn't win and only got within a few points, it would be a huge strategic victory. But if he does win, and it does seem that all indications are that he will, it's a massive blow to the establishment in a number of ways. Number one, because they can't just use Trump to turn around and arbitrarily say that this swamp candidate will win. It's not going to work. Because the Trump movement is not a lockstep, you know, sort of a zombie-like, do whatever Trump says sort of kind of movement. We're not robots. We support the agenda. We support America First. We support Make America Great Again. That is why I wrote a book about this. It was called Citizens for Trump. Mitch McConnell should have read it. I guess not. He should have learned that we supported Trump not because of Trump the man, but because of Trump the message. That's what Roy Moore embodied. And this is going to send huge indications, shockwaves really, throughout 2018. And we've already seen the first shockwave of that, the first shoe to drop, is that in the state just north of Alabama, the state of Tennessee, Senator Bob Corker has just announced that he will be dropping out. He is going to be retiring.
He sees the writing on the wall.
He sees the writing on the wall. Yep. He does not want to face these voters. He does not want to face the Trump movement. He does not want to face the MAGA movement. He will not seek re-election in 2018. So we've been calling it Rev 18. And Rev 18 is a project that we were already getting started. But it looks like Rev 18 is coming early. It's only 2017. And right. Already we saw indications of this with House members, these never Trumpers, that the minute a primary challenger got in, they started announcing, I'm not even going to do it. I'm not even going to do it. I'm getting out. I don't want to be in the race. We're now seeing senators. This is probably the highest profile Senate retirement that we've seen so far in this cycle. And honestly, I predict there's going to be more to come.
And I've got a prediction that's going to happen tonight, probably on Rachel Maddow's show. She's going to go, Trump was defeated. She's going to say Trump was defeated because, yeah. But this is the best part of this.
It's a referendum on Trump.
She's going to say Trump was defeated because he supported Strange. He endorsed him. He went to the rally. And look, the people of Alabama have spoken. They don't want a real Trumpian in there. They don't want somebody who Trump supports. But here's the great part. We've got a guy who's better than Strange coming in, who's probably going to support Trump even more.
And that's the
beauty of it.
It's
the beauty of the Trump movement that a lot of other whether it's on the left or the traditional neoconservative right, it's we're allowed to have this intellectual diversity, and it shows that we're focused on the ideas. We're not just sycophants focusing on some demagogue. We're actually into the ideas, the agenda, and the plan that this man represents. So we're allowed to have that intellectual diversity, even with the man himself. We're saying, no. This guy, this other guy that you didn't endorse, he's got the better plan. He's going to work with your agenda better. And I think that's the real beauty of the Trump movement.
Yeah,
I think you were saying before that usually they wait until there's an actual the primary's done and there's somebody going in, then they, you know, the president will support that person. They usually don't these primaries.
You'd usually don't see the president coming down and incumbent president getting involved in a primary like this. You would usually see them to kind of want to, what they call it, keeping your powder dry, right? I want to keep my powder dry. I'm going to wait till I see how things shake out, and then I'm going to come down. I want to put the thumb on the scales of the election, because there's also, and it does represent, you have to admit that it does represent in some ways, it's going to blow his winning streak, right? So if President Trump has been 5-for-5 in terms of special elections, his endorsed candidate has won all five that happened so far this year. So if, and all indications again are that Roy Moore is going to be the next senator from Alabama, if that does take place, then it's going to be 5-for-6. So he's losing that 100% average. Mm-hmm. And it does indicate, but you know, honestly, with the political cycle, the way things are, the news cycle, the way things are, it's not going to be that big of a deal for the president. He's already moving forward. He's going to be going to Puerto Rico. There's so many things on his plate. He's dealing with North Korea. I don't think he's going to take any kind of political hit with it. The mainstream media is going to be upset about it. They're going to try to raise hay against it. But like you said, MSNBC, CNN, their audiences already hate Trump. So it doesn't really make that much of a difference.
But they got to give him something. They got to look, here's some bloody fish.
There's something. Chum the water.
Yeah, they're going to gobble it up and go, we need more. These little goblin creatures.
We're going to need a bigger boat.
Exactly. So it really is. But it's great to see. And I think Roy Moore is going to do a great job. And then you were saying, do you want to let the cat out of the bag on who might run into Corker's spot?
So there's been a name floated just within the last hour, a report that came out about who might run to replace Bob Corker. And I have no idea if this is a float at this point or there is some actual consideration behind it. But Peyton Manning, if you can believe it or not, the football legend Peyton Manning, possibly. And this guy, he is on the record as being a conservative, as being someone who is in line. They are talking, and this is not any of my sources saying this. This is all over the place that Peyton Manning could run. We don't know if this is within his camp or not, but he's definitely been out. He's definitely made political statements in the past, and his name's out there. I say if he wants that race, he would easily win that Senate seat.
Well, he's got to pass the knee test first. We got to see where he is on the knee controversy.
Oh, that's a very good point.
Will he take the
knee? We have a new litmus test. Will he take the knee?
It's all about the knee.
Litmus test. No,
everybody.
Manning, he's going to stand up.
Isn't it funny though that the Democrats have literally right?
If he stands, he'll win.
Exactly. If he doesn't kneel, he's going to win. And now we've got the Democrats kneeling before us. Like, you've won. We give up. They're literally kneeling before Zod.
Trump has found a way to make his critics literally kneel to him.
Do we have the kneel before Zod clip, guys?
Trump.
We were playing that earlier. I was having so much fun with that. And Alex pointed out it was perfect.
Right. Let's rock and roll out with the kneel before Zod clip. We got about 2 minutes, 20 seconds left. Don't forget, you can go to InfoWarsStore.com and support everything we're doing here. We have some great deals. Let me tell you about them real quick. Vitamin Mineral Fusion, 50% off. We haven't had that on sale for a while, so take advantage of that. Oxy Powder is a great cleansing, intestinal cleanse. If you haven't tried it, get a bottle. You get several uses out of one bottle. Trust me, it's great. I do about 7 capsules at night when I use it. You might want to start with 5, but don't take. Read the back of the bottle; it tells you what to do. Alexa Pure Breeze, 20% off. Alexa Pure Pro, which is the water filter version of the Alexa Pure Breeze, which is the air cleaner version. That's also 20% off. And all Emrex Essential Packs are 50% off. And this week only, 35% off Brain Force Plus. Don't go away without trying Brain Force Plus. It is one of our stalwart products. Everybody uses it here in the office. It'll wake you up without making you feel all jittery, but you got to use that. You got to use the promo code Supercharge. But if you want an extra 10%, use the promo code War Room. That's still going on. Guys, did we find that? We do have it. Let's roll it. Let's roll some Zod. Kneel before Zod, Democrats. And then we'll kneel.
Do we know if this is a Democrat president that did it?
It was the 80s. In the movie. It does kind of look like a Reagan.
Yeah. He kind of looks like Trump, though, too. Did he change the color of the hair? Oh, no!
We're not going to get to the kneel before Zod. It happens 20 seconds from now. That's what happens when you don't scrub your clips. But hey, whatever. It was a last-minute choice. It was a last-minute pick out of the hat. And that's going to do it for today's installment of The War Room. Join us again tomorrow, 3 p.m. Central, 2, 6 p.m. Central. We'll see you again.